with a soul that's on fire. Maybe too hot to the touch, but baby, feel my desire.
You start a fire in me.
Start a fire in me.
You are the air I breathe.
You are the air I breathe.
Watching the flames burn high.
Watching the flames burn high and high.
Feel my desire. You start.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Bretro here on the Grapple Patreon. I'm Matty.
And I'm Gareth.
And Gareth, it's episode 4, matey. We're officially a franchise, a series now, you know. We're officially keeping on going, mate. And, you know, this is our, you know, monthly look at Bret the Hitman Hart and all his, in all his glory, with all his big matches, his hidden gems, his matches you might have forgot about, never knew happened, never knew existed, you know. We tick all boxes with Bret, don't we, mate?
We do. And that's the point, isn't it, of this, is that we can talk the good stuff, the big stuff, and we can also go through and just, like, pull out some stuff that just interesting, just a bit different as well, like, just to bring in something new to the table. So, once again, just looking forward to just getting in there and just talking about Bret Hart. Just what you need is a wrestling fan palate cleanser this month, I think.
Yes, totally. And in episode 2, Gareth, we covered Bret Hart kicking it with the Click. And today, in the episode 4, it's another backstage crew that Bret's going to be getting in there with, isn't it?
It is. It's some of your old favourites, am I? The old Bone Street crew. I've heard a rumour you've got a BSK tattoo on your belly as well, like me, but I've never seen it. Just a rumour I've heard.
And you have shared hotel rooms with me as well, so maybe I was covering it up. Maybe I was. But yeah, we're knocking bones with the BSK, aren't we today, Gareth? And me, two-part question first, mate, before we cover anything, is when's the last time you actually played dominoes, and are you a fan of the game? Because we all know it's named that Domino's is a big, you know, the group was formed after with all these wrestlers just sitting backstage playing Domino's, and it was Yokozuna, old Rodney himself, and The Undertaker who, you know, coined the phrase the Bone Street Crew. So, yeah, because I'm a big fan myself, Gareth. I love having a game of Domino's, and I do call it Bones now. And when I say Bones to people, they're like, what? I go, oh, Domino's, sorry. So it's like, it's one of them things that just fixated in my mind, mate. So, you know, find yourself last time you played?
I fucking couldn't tell you the last time I played Domino's. It's just one of them. God, childhood, mate. Childhood.
Next time we're together in person, I'll bring a box.
It's going to be a thing. We could have our own little Bone Street crew, mate. is this going to be us in the pub when we're 60? Just like,
yeah. Meeting up, Jack and Domino's.
Meeting up in the Baltic Fleet in town or something like that, and just a little afternoon with a bag of bones.
Oh, it's great stuff, isn't it? But yeah, so Gareth, can you, what matches are we going to cover today with the BSK?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll go the headline one first. Okay. Obviously, you know, everybody knows that we've been going through Bret's world title wins in chronological order. So naturally, we get to the fifth and final one at SummerSlam 1997, where he takes on The Undertaker. So that's the final of his 5 WWF world titles that he had. So, you know, no surprise to anyone, I'm sure, that that's going to be the one that we're talking about there. But the old tie-in for the second match, it does come. Obviously, Matty's been asking about the old dominoes there, and we're not talking Cliff Compton when we're talking about that. We're talking the Bone Street Crew there. Obviously, everybody knows about the Click, you know, but you also had the Bone Street Crew going on in the background there, where you had, you know, the likes of the Undertaker and his lads there, where you had Yokozuna in there, and you had, like, Fatu, the Godfather, you know, Savio Vega, the Midian, Henry Godwin, Crush, so a lot of likely lads there mixing with each other as well. Maybe maybe a bit different to what was going on in, with the click, a bit different level of lads on the cards, but they were all people there who were pretty much stalwarts of the WWF Attitude Era, you know, a few different gimmicks along the way between the few lads. And I think, you know, so for this, just to tie into the Undertaker match, just to try and bring a bit of the theme to the show, you're thinking, okay, well, is there somebody else in that BSK that Brett's maybe had a match with that we could look at there? And there's various stuff that Brett's done, working on Monday Night Raw, working on Superstars and things with a lot of the different lads there. But the one we've landed on is his match with Fatu, or Rikishi, as people are going to better know him as. But this goes all the way back to the 1st of March 1993, the 7th episode of Monday Night Raw. And Brett goes out there and as a world champion, has a match with one of the Edge Shrinkers, as you do.
Yeah. That's why we're here, Gareth, and that's why we love him so much. That is why Rikishi as well, also part of that bloodline, Gareth. I'm not dating the this podcast, but BSK bloodline, he's got it all covered as a Salofa Fatu, hasn't he? He's a legendary figure. But and you know, if we can go into the first match, Gareth, and the story behind the first match, and not, as you say, there's not really much to go into story-wise, as you say, because it is just a title defense on Monday Night Raw. But, you know, we're coming off, this is Brett's first WWF title run. He's in the midst of it, coming to the end of it, really, because this is a month before WrestleMania 9, where he'll get in there with fellow BSK member Yokozuna, you know, with Rikishi at WrestleMania 9. And he's just come off the Royal Rumble, defending against Razor Ramon. In a match that I haven't seen for a long time myself, that one. That's another one we probably covered at some point. So, yeah, this is just, as you say, just a title defence opening Monday Night Raw, Gareth, really.
Yeah, that's it. And it is, it's almost like sort of classic for that time period, really, of just, you know, I mentioned there, like the, you know, other lads in the BSK, you know, around this time, you know, Brett's had matches there where he's worked with Crush, he's worked with... Yeah. Quang, Savio Vega, kind of around this time. There's like other matches, and this is kind of just like, I suppose it's of its time a little bit, really. If is that those early days of like Monday Night Raw getting like a world title match that's happening and going on there. It was something as you just sort of like starting to evolve into this era, and it just being a bit different to what you'd see on Superstars and Challenge and things. And this was sort of why Monday Night Raw was so groundbreaking, and that it was at the time of this, you know, this evening time slot, this, you know, wrestling show where you were seeing, you know, your main eventers and things like that going out there and having matches, sometimes working, you know, solid long matches with each other. Sometimes it's putting, you know, a younger lad over or something like that, but a bit much less kind of squashy, really, than we'd seen in the past, where, you know, typically you'd have had guys coming out and just beating some jobber. Now there was matches here that had a bit more meat on the bones, and it was just like one of them great opportunity, really, for you know, the likes of a Brett to just get his working boots on there with somebody else, and where it might have been a house show match previously, or it might have been something you'd have to go to a house show to see. Now you're getting to see matches like this on TV as well, which just really sort of like help kickstart really that Monday Night era of wrestling.
Well, that's it. Even before Monday Night Raw, Gareth, if you touched on it there, Brett was probably one of the first guys to be doing this, because you didn't get Hogan defending it on telly. Really, Warrior even. We're like Bret Hart when he won the belt off Ric Flair, which we've covered in this series. Like, he had like that was his gimmick. He was the fighting champion on TV within the first like 30 days. I think Mean Gene and Bret had a promo, and he was saying like he defended against Virgil on like Superstars, then Wrestling Challenge against like your Papa Shango's. So as you said there and touched on it, it even predated Monday Night Raw. As soon as he got the belt, Bret, he was like, no, I'm going to work with anyone. Get in there, make it work, and be this fighting champion.
And that's it. And I think it was, you know, it's one of those where when we're putting the show together, you know, there's a lot of matches out there that is working with different guys in this type of environment. And, you know, again, as we've sort of said on previous shows, you're not going to go away and go, oh, that was a 5-star classic, or that was a 4.5-star match or something like that. But what he was the king of was that nice, neat and tidy 10-minute match, working with somebody else who could work, and, you know, having that sort of 3-3.5-star match on TV, which again, you're going back to the time and you're looking at it, you know, still matches here that hold up for what they are and what they're meant to be at this time, but stood out back in the day as well. This idea that you're getting like a 3-star match just on the telly there, you know, a above average, good match kind of thing. That you again, you, I think we're so spoiled as wrestling fans these days that, you know, you can turn on the channel every week, and no matter what show you watch from what country or whatever, you can pretty much watch a four-star wrestling match every week of your life. You know, that wasn't the case, was it? When, you know, no. I was going to say when we were kids, when I was a kid and you were a baby, that wasn't the that wasn't the case. So again, it was just that great showcase for stuff like this.
But even, and I don't want to be that guy and that old guy even, but like even the matches now, you're saying four stars, but they don't look as realistic or as smooth or as snug as these type of matches. So, you know, the debate can go on forever on star ratings, which we won't go into today. But match one, Gareth, you know, get to give its official title, is Bret the Hitman Hart versus Fatu for the WWF title. March 1st, 1993, as you alluded to, the 7th episode, the Monday Night Raw. 1,000 people packed into the Manhattan Center in New York City with Vince McMahon, Randy Savage, and your old friend, Rob Bartlett, back on commentary. But this time, he's not himself. He's bloody disguised, talking, doing whatever you want. He's Elvis Presley, mate. Well, what's going on here?
I tell you what, I liked a bit of Elvis a bit more than I liked a bit of Rob Bartlett. He should have done this gimmick on his other show, on the other shows as well, because he definitely came across a lot better on commentary than this. I think we were talking before we started there about how we did that Monday Night Raw month one episode and thought he was absolutely just done by episode four, and everyone had seen their ass with him and things like that. But he's tried something new. He's tried something different. You can't blame the lad for a little gimmick change there and pulling back the old Elvis. Everyone loves a bit of Elvis, so there you go. A little bit of kudos for Rob today. And you know, how ridiculous can you look when you sat there next to Randy Savage? Who's the one in fancy dress and who isn't?
totally, Gareth. So Gareth, as only you can, my friend, do you want to take it away with the match itself?
Yeah, so you know, obviously, you know, this is a match, it's opening the show. Where it's no build, there's no hot feud, there's no hot storyline, something going into it. It's Bret Hart, the world champion, he's a fighting champion, and he's out on TV, and he's going to have a match against the person he's been booked to have a match with, you know, at the end of the day for this particular show. And you know, on this occasion, it's Fatu from the Head Shrinkers, and I think it's one of those where you almost have to try and kind of like create something relatively quickly kind of thing, just to sort of, you know, build that level of interest that goes into it. And you know, you've very much, as the match starts, you've got that you know, crossbody attempt by Bret where, you know, Fatu slams him, Fatu misses an elbow and Bret applies an armbar. You've got Bret dropping Fatu with a shoulder block, and then they're running the ropes and Bret feigns been tripped, and then he rolls up Fatu, you know, for a near fall. And
that's not Bret playing possum again, is it, Gareth, that he's done many a time?
Well, I might have the word possum written down here in minutes, Matty. one of his great characteristics there that we could always come. I need to look into that a bit more. I need to do some possum research and find out if it's something that's going on in the wild there in Australia or something like that. These things. I don't know where that phrase come from. But you've got different things here with, you know, Fatu slamming Bret to try and, you know, break the armbar, but Bret rolling through and
love that spot.
You know, retaining the armbar. You've got Fatu pushing Bret against the ropes, dropping down for a backdrop. And then Bret pauses and smashes Fatu's head into the mat. Now, I'll pause there because they've done this great, just an early thing. They're just establishing. You've got this idea of the hitman, the excellence of execution. Fatu's going for moves, but Bret's one step ahead of him. He's the world champion. He's that technical master. Everything Fatu's doing there, he's going to move out of the way. He's going to stop and he's going to miss a backdrop. He's going to roll through the armbar and things like that. So Bret just shown his intelligence that he's got early on that's going to get better of him. But whether it's confidence, whether it's arrogance or something like that, old Bret forgets the older rule of in wrestling when you're wrestling a Samoan. And what do you never do to a Samoan, Matty, when you're wrestling them?
You never target their cranium and the head, mate. You just don't go there. But this is a great spot, though, Gareth. This is superb, this.
Oh, yeah. You know, Bret, pauses, smashes Fatu's head into the mat, but then Fatu immediately springs up and lands a savak kick for a near fall there. It's a fucking beauty. You know, if you're in maths and you get your little triangle thing, whatever those things are called, that you're measured with, it'd almost be like perfect on that line there, the kick from Fatu here, and Brett goes down just selling it perfectly here. But, you know, it was a nice little wrinkle early on there that they're sort of like establishing this idea of Brett's too smart, he's too clever, he's too savvy for this one. But then forgets the old rule there now. But this is where that's opened the door now, and you've got, you know, Fatu, you know, working here. He's on top, you know, he drops a headbutt on Brett, he lands a big clothesline on him and gets, you know, a second 2.5 count here. So that's after the savak kick and after this, that's two in a row where he's had, you know, like a semi-near fall on Brett very early in the match. He's then like applying a nerve hold to Brett's shoulder on that trapezius muscle, a good old Samoan tactic there as well. So Fatu rolling out the Samoan greatest hits here on his offense with Brett here. You know, Brett trying to get a bit of separation into it to, you know, get away, but Fatu dropping him with a elbow here as well. So very much cementing this idea that you've got Fatu sort of establishing himself on top. And then at this stage, you get Samu, the other head shrinker, heads down from ringside. So there you sort of like add in another element of complexity to the match there. You've already got Afa, the manager, the father or grandfather. You're the Samoan heritage one here. I think it's
Samu's dad. Yeah, he's Samu's dad.
Samu's dad on the outside as well. So there's now three of them there that Brett's got to think about in this match. You know, Brett tries to put some motion into it again and lands a crossbody, but, you know, Fatu kicks out of the pin that follows it. Brett rolls to the outside, and here we have Samu now getting his digs in here. You know, he slams Brett on the outside. He drops a headbutt as Afa and Fatu distract the referee, and then you've got Samu throwing Brett into the steps. So not only have you got Fatu on top getting the better of him in ring, you've got the outside threat from Afa and Samu going on there on the outside as well there. So Brett's now is looking like a man in jeopardy. And back in the ring, you've got Fatu using that hard head, repeatedly headbutting Brett. He's landing forearms on Brett, fires him into the buckle, lands a backbreaker for another 2.5 count. And Brett really just sneaks out on this one here. So you've now had three instances here where Brett's he's had to kick out at 2.5, and his last one wasn't with any real authority, as a Gorilla Monsoon might say. And so you've got the lads going on the outside. Now you've got Angabout. You know, they're really kind of like establishing Fatu as a threat well here, you know, because he's got the world champion in peril for essentially what's sort of like a upper mid-card tag team wrestler here. So they've done a good job here on that point of view that, you know, you're thinking, oh, shit, like, could Brett lose here? Like, could, you know, is something hokey going to happen? Is something weird going to happen? You know, you've got Fatu landing more headbutts. He gets another 2.5 count. He pile drives Brett, gets another 2.5 count. So, you know, they're really kind of turning it on here and just like establishing that element of threat there. Yeah, Brett came into the match with a bit of a bloody nose already. You've now got Fatu biting that and making that even more bloody as well there. So again, just bringing that element of kind of like additional violence to it. And then following on from that, Fatu drops a headbutt on him. And here we get a 2.99 count. So again, he's getting closer. He's edging even closer to beating Brett here. So, you know, the way this match has been structured, it's just putting this nothing match that's no real reason for it happening. Suddenly, yeah, like halfway through the match, you're in a position where they're really establishing that fucking hell, Brett's in peril here. And, you know, this head shrinker is a proper threat here. You know, Fatu side slams Brett, goes for a diving headbutt from the second rope, and he gets a 2.99 again here on the kick out. But I think something that's important here, where Brett had slid out of a couple of ones, he'd only just sort of slightly got his shoulder up. Here you've got like a bit more authority on the kick out for Brett. And in the same way that the Brett ramming Fatu's head into the mat earlier, fired up Fatu and put him on top, that headbutt from Fatio, it's almost like woke Brett up, and it shook, you know, shook Brett awake here of like, fucking hell, I better do something here, lads, yeah. You know, sort of thing. Like, I'm in a bit of trouble here, you know. So it's almost come full circle there. And here you've got Fatu going to the, he's landed the headbutt from the second rope. He's now going to the top rope. So he's going to the top rope to try and land the diving headbutt from the top rope. But whether it's playing possum, whether it's the adrenaline that we've got from Brett, from, you know, kicking out of that last pinfall, Brett springs up, you know, cutting Fatu off on the top row, pushes him cross first, crotch first onto the top rope, and then superplexes him for a 2.99 of his own there. So again, Brett's quickly swung the tables right back and landed that big superplex, got a near fall of his own that just shows, no hang about, lads, I'm the fucking world champion kind of thing here. Like, I nearly did it there with one superplex and one recovery, you know, there's a lot there. And he's furious at Hebner, the referee here. Here's where you get Brett working into the sequence. So, you know, he lands the bulldog for a near fall, puts on the, you know, does the backbreaker, lands the elbow from the second. And then he puts the sharpshooter on Fatu. But, you know, Hebner's distracted by Afu, which means that Samu's got another chance to kind of turn the tables in the favour of his tag partner there. So Samu comes in, clubs Brett from behind. Samu then pins Brett. But as Fatu's on the outside of the ring,
bit of twin magic going on here.
bit of twin magic, the old switcheroo. I'm surprised Earl Hebner wasn't onto this one either as well. Like, he's got a bit of experience of that one of his own. But anyway, Brett kicks out of that one, and then for some reason they immediately switch back, and Samu rolls to the outside, and Samu, the tired man, comes back in as Afa's doing the description there. Brett slaps on the sleeper, but Samu gets up on the apron as Brett is holding onto that sleeper. So Brett fires Fatu forwards, hits into Samu. Samu rotates over the top rope, and he's now hung between the twisted second and
what
third
a spot.
Rope. There, you know, just like just a great one of like, how do we take Samu out of the game? Right, from the sleeper, we're going to do this. There you go. He's trapped. What's he going to do for me? And nothing.
Can't get involved, can't
interfere anymore. We've got another lad on the outside, though, haven't we? You know, we've got Afu there as well. So Brett quickly does the side rushing on Fatu, and then runs and gives Afu the big drop kick there, knocking him off the apron. Perfect looking drop kick as well from Brett here, knocking him to the outside. Back in the ring, it's one on one now. Fatu's on his back, sharpshooter turns it over, and Fatu taps to the sharpshooter and. Fighting against adversity, using his savviness and cunning to come out on top and overcome it. Your winner, Brett the Hitman Hart.
In 15 minutes and 30 seconds, Gareth. So we're opening Raw here, which, you know, 45-minute shows without the adverts. And you're getting, as you say, a good, solid, long title match as well. And as you say, you've described it perfect there. There was times where the way they actually, with Samu there, with Afa on the outside, that Fatu could actually beat the new WWF champion here. Literally, in a cold match that hasn't been, like, you know, built up or nothing. They've done so well with that. And this was always, as well, this was on the, I forgot to mention, this was on one of Brett the Hitman Hart's VHS releases, the Silver Vision ones, maybe his 90, obviously it would be his 1993, maybe 94 one. And I used to love this match because I used to watch it on that and it cut. So, like, obviously it just split up. It wasn't the full 15 minutes, but you got about the 10 minutes, but I always loved the last 5 minutes of this match, and it was just perfect the way Brett gets out of that pedal and is your winner, and it's just so well laid out, Gareth, and executed great. Love it.
Exactly, and like to me, again, it's just another example, as we talked about previously on the other shows, as we'll talk about ad nauseum on all the future shows that we do as well, of just putting together a match structure. And okay, there's that like basic element, you know, to it of, you know, heel on top and things like that, naturally, that they're going to go with in this little scenario. But they're not just going to rest on the laurels and just have a match. There's got to be a wrinkle in there kind of thing. There's got to be something that they're doing with this match. Brett understands that, well, how can we have a serious 15 match here if people don't take Fatu credibly and seriously, sort of thing? So they quickly like work on, you know, making that the case with those near falls that they throw into the match early. You know, a lot of Brett matches, you might not get a lot of pinfalls early on, sort of thing. And it's something that he's talked about a lot in the past, is the value of a pinfall in what it can bring to a match and what it can the way it can kind of like establish certain scenarios and certain points. It's not something that you just throw. It's not a throwaway thing. If you don't just cover a guy just because kind of thing, there's a reason that you're covering them at that moment in time. And then the timing of that cover, the timing of the kick out and everything like that, it all plays into, you know, where people talk about, you know, stories in wrestling and things like that outside the ring. This is what I live for. It's the little things in the ring sort of thing.
You're educating me on these, Gareth, as well, as we go along. Because, no, Brett, you're right. Brett, in his shoot interviews, I think I fired you that one over where it's the psychology one, where he's talking. It's like, as you say, don't go for the pins all the time, but it's important that you do go for a pin every so often. Because as basic it is, you're establishing that you're trying to win the match that you're involved in. It's as basic and it's as simple as that, really. And sometimes wrestling can get complicated, and when wrestling is complicated and they do pull it off, it is good, but sometimes you shouldn't overcomplicate it at the same time. And, you know, basic isn't a bad word at all, I don't think, when it comes to wrestling.
No, definitely not. But, you know, I think the best stuff are when the basics are done right. And, you know, again, I sound like an old timer myself here, but it's like, well, I am. It's slowing it down. It's doing less. Less is more. And, you know,
well, like hitting what it is less. Crisply and smoothly and realistically, that's what it's all about.
Making it look proper, and, you know, bringing that to the fore there as well. But is the other key part of this match, obviously, as we've touched upon there, is just the finish kind of thing. Because if you're gonna then establish that you're getting the other two, you know, members of the three involved in some way, you've got to get rid of them to win, because otherwise they're just going to interfere again as well. And how do you do that? You could hit one of them kind of thing with a chair or something like that and just leave him laid on the outside or something like that. Or you could do something a bit different there and then, you know, doing
but
the
it's,
whole
it's that kind of it's Samu, the young guy who's more of a threat, getting hung so he can't come in. And Affer is the old guy. You can hit him with the drop kick and that makes sense. That would lay him out, you know, because he's an older guy type thing. So it's just all perfectly done. And Brett, you know, he's one of the best finish men of all time. He genuinely has put a lot of thought into not just his matches, but especially the finishes of these matches.
And I think that's it. When, you know, you go back and, you know, you think about a variety of Brett matches, you know, again, we've talked about it previously on, you know, other shows, the finishes are just clearly like a big, big part of that. And if we didn't tie our two matches together today based on the BSK, we could have tied them together as well on inventive finishes as well, couldn't we really? Because again, it's just a Bret Hart trademark.
Yeah, totally, mating. Yeah, and that sums up and covers match one, Gareth. So we'll move on to match two and the story behind match two here today. And yeah, it's Bret Hart and Undertaker, as we've announced that it's his fifth WWF title win. And looking into the history of these, Gareth, two of the biggest names in the WWF, WWE history. And they only ever wrestled five times, five singles matches they ever had. And one of them was on a house show. So they had four. So I'll go through all five of them. You had the Madison Square Garden house show in January 92, where Undertaker's in full zombie mode. So Bret would have had to get a different type of match out of him there. You had the WWF title defense by Bret at Royal Rumble in 96. You had the rematch the next night on Monday Night Raw. You had this one today, which was match four that they had. And match five was a month later after this at One Night Only in the NEC in Birmingham, England. So, Gareth, two big stars like this and only five matches between them. It's wild for me, that.
It is. It's especially just given that the level that they were both working at throughout that team time period. I suppose, obviously, for a lot of it, Undertaker was just getting paired off with your... the day they couldn't work and things like that. And I think that's one of the... reasons he would have liked to work with Bret a bit more, wouldn't he, sort of thing, so he could
he loves him actually, loves get, him for that. get his
working boots on and show what he can do. And obviously, you know, people talk about latter day Undertaker when he did do that a bit more often, and, you know, obviously his big WrestleMania matches and things like that towards the end of the streak and stuff like that. But, you know, again, it was, you know, some of these matches that he had with Bret at this time, and then obviously Shawn could kind of show that there was a bit more there. And again, it probably helped give Undertaker a bit of longevity, really, as a character as well, as he kind of like evolved that over this time period and things like that, because he couldn't be that, you know, zombie forever, could he?
No, he definitely couldn't. And as I said, there, he, you know, in his interviews, even up until this day, he credits Bret Hart with having some of the best matches he's ever had. So, and it's only a short list, as we've just discussed. So he really must rate the, obviously, I'm guessing it's the SummerSlam one we're going to talk about, and the One Night Only one, which I did look at Cage Match, Gareth, for this, and done my own head in with that, but I've got to get me data from somewhere, mate. And it's the One Night Only match has got a slightly higher rating than this SummerSlam match, but they're very both highly rated. So once again, like, it just shows you that you nailed it. The Undertaker's in there and actually having good matches, because even the Foley matches the year before, they were the first that, like, as you say, we wasn't carrying the monsters you couldn't wear, but they were more brawls, weren't they? Mm-hmm. This was more, yeah. I'm getting in there and having wrestling matches as well. So yeah, he owes a lot to Brett, like.
It is, and I suppose when you talk about those matches, you know, they almost do seem sort of like a little bit tied together, because obviously Brett's involved in Undertaker's first match as well, isn't he, at Survivor Series?
Yeah, he is. First, yeah.
You know, he's involved in that one too there. So they're kind of like, you know, they've been involved, but you'd have thought they'd have thought they'd have touched a bit more, Matty.
Well, that's it. And also, when you think about it, I'm saying this, and it is another time thing, isn't it? It's like, it's 7 years they were there, which, you know, it is a long time, but they were mainly two of the bigger baby faces, weren't they, as well, which obviously kept them. It was a bit of a no-no, although they lent into it, you know, for that Rumble match, especially where it's a babyface match, which, you know, we will cover one day in episode 57 or something like that down the line. But, you know, the actual, if we can delve into the actual story on TV behind this match, we've got, you know, a month before this, it's the IWC All-Timer of Canadian Stampede, Gareth. We've got the Hart Foundation, Brett Owen, Davey, Jim, Brian Pillman, defeating Stone Cold, Legion of Doom, Goldust, and Ken Shamrock. And, you know, the night after that on Monday Night Raw, July the 7th, on Monday Night Raw, Bret Hart cuts that, you know, it's one of his all-time promos, really, Gareth. It's they're in Canada, and Bret, it's the old, you know, in Canada, we still take care of the sick and the old. We still get health care. We've got gun control. He's just bigging up Canada, proud to be Canadian. And then we get another Bret classic. And I promise everyone here that in the SummerSlam, I will beat The Undertaker. And if I lose and I don't win the WWF title, I will never wrestle on American soil again. So it just gives this big title match even more stakes. That and this was right in the midst of the Canada and America wars every Monday night on Raw, which is just a great time. You look, but even looking back at these little the fans, Gareth, they're just rabid. Brilliant.
Aww. I mean, we talk about 1997.
A lot. You know, like, there's a reason. Give Ben all that. There's a reason. There's a reason.
And absolutely, like, because it is the best. And, you know, we're like, you're looking at things like this and you're just thinking about that time period and those, you know, every single Raw just felt like, I can't miss this. I've got to watch it kind of thing. You know, it was just, it was, and Brett as well, just doing whereas obviously he's always loved him in ring. This was the best Bret Hart character work that we ever saw 100%. As well, coming out and doing these promos. He just, like, had that credibility and confidence and honesty and reality and things like that on the mic. And, you know, it was just him just being able to lean into what he's thinking in his head anyway and leaning into, you know, some of the backstage things that are going on a bit more, just, like, unquestionably brought the best out of him here. And, you know, he just, you know, got the time period going into SummerSlam. Arguably, you've just got, like, maybe the best incarnation of Bret Hart that we've seen at this point, just in terms of ticking all the boxes. You know, this is exciting. Like, if I could, like, you know, swallow a pill and go back to a time period as a wrestling fan, you know, it would be to, you know, the second half of this year and up to this point. This is just where it was the best for me.
Brilliant, mate. And 2 weeks after that, Gareth, we get, you know, the Bret and Undertaker touching in ring, because we've got a six-man flag match from Halifax, Canada. Sorry. It's Bret, Owen and Davey representing Canada going up against representing the United States of America. It's The Undertaker, Stone Cold, Steve Austin and Dude Love here, Gareth, I always remember this match that always stuck out to me, part of them Best of Raw tapes and stuff like that that they used to release. And this was just, once again, just, you could just put any combination of the Hart Foundation and the guys to feud them with each week, and the fans would just be so into it.
Did Mark not have the old Stars and Stripes on the inside of his coat here by this point yet? No.
I was sticking it one off that.
Could have busted it out a bit earlier. Here, but You're saying that like it's obviously I watched this that match at the time. I don't think I'd ever watch that match back again, like ever since since watching it on
names,
Raw,
though,
in Raw in 97. But when you say those six names together, yeah. I'm like, yeah, I've got to squeeze that one in the next week just to watch that, just for the nostalgia and the names and things like that involved. Like, what a big time.
It is. And also, Gareth, I don't think we can ever get through an episode of Bresso without mentioning Shawn Michaels or referring to him. But yeah, so the week before SummerSlam, because obviously, Shawn Michaels is the special guest referee in this match, which we haven't touched on. And the week before SummerSlam, it's Bret Hart, and he loses to Del Wilkes, the Patriot, because Shawn Michaels is distracted. He's on commentary, and Michaels is up dancing and stuff, and Bret's distracted, and Patriot gets the win. So this is why this, we'll talk about the finisher. I'm guessing I think we're going to wax lyrical about the finish of the match coming up, but this just ties in everything with Bret and Shawn after their real-life fight that they had there, where they plunked each other's hair out, didn't they, and pulled each other's hair out. Whatever you believe, story going round. And you've got the real-life stuff there with Bret and Shawn. And then, once again, you've got even the Patriot getting a win on Bret, foreshadowing Bret winning Undertaker. And you've got Del Wilkes lined up as Bret's first title defence, which happens in real life. So the booking's on point at this point, Gareth.
It is. And that's, again, but that's why it's the best time period, really. Stuff's just so joined up, there's thought, it's just planned out well, people are just thinking about what next kind of thing to each of those things. And because there's so many moving parts that you've got with like the different characters at this point, they need to as well, kind of thing. And you can't take the WCW factor out of the equation.
Just not to say that
they're in a fight, everything's got to be on point, everything's got to be top level. It's not just the in-ring performances, it's not just the promos, it's got to be making stuff make sense, it's got to be making stuff all joined together, the bigger picture storytelling, and trying to think about, well, what's happening next. Meanwhile, you've got all the shit going on backstage as well, where I'm not working with him, I'm not going to job to him, kind of, etc. All this business going on as well. So it's an absolute credit for this time period for how well it's all laid out and how well it's written.
Yep. So, Gareth, that brings us to match two today. It's Bret the Hitman Hart versus The Undertaker for the WWF title at SummerSlam 1997. Tagline, Heart and Soul, with the special guest referee, Shawn Michaels, on August the 3rd, 1997, from the Continental Airlines Arena in East Rutherford, New Jersey. 20,123 fans in the building for this big one, Gareth. And Vince McMahon, Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler on commentary for this one. So, Gareth, if you want to, as once again, as only you can, mate, do you want to take it away?
Well, before I start, did you reference Shawn Michaels' stipulation there?
Oh, no, I missed that one, Gareth. Do you want to inform the listeners?
Yeah, because I think this ties into the match and the ongoing story with Bret and Shawn, like quite a lot as well, that Shawn had come out and after Bret had said that if he lost that he wouldn't wrestle in the United States again, like Shawn Michaels says that if he didn't call it down the middle, that he would do the same. So, so again, while Shawn's cost Bret the match against the Patriots the week before and the ongoing animosity between Bret and Shawn, there's always that part of it that's like, well, Shawn's just going to fuck him, isn't he? Like completely, because they don't like each other and things like that. So there's that thought process going into the match that they then add this little wrinkle to the match as well, with Shawn coming out and saying that too. So then now you're thinking, oh, well, is he going to call it down the middle? Like, what? How is he going to referee this match? Because why would he referee it, down, like not be anti Bret Hart and things like that in this match as well. So I think it just adds another layer to this one. But yeah, you've got Bret. Bret comes down to the ring first, and you've got Bret getting in the ring and dedicating this match to his Canadian fans and fans from around the world who feel the same way that he does. So continuing to build on this me and the rest of the world versus America storyline that he's got going on, and we're better to do than right here in the good old US of A, getting some good heat for that one, getting the Canadian national anthem playing there as well, standing in the ring to that one, just riling the crowd up further to be even more anti-Bret with that one. You've got Shawn Michaels comes to the ring in full dancing Sean Modier, you know, Brett talks about in his book about how he's, you know, he's coming out. I think he must have been a stripper in his past life or something
on
like that.
On the wind up, Sean, he lays it on even more when he's in front of Brett, though, doesn't he? Because he knows he hates it.
Proper wind and Brett up here as well, to the extent that Brett's still talking about it in his book, looking 20 years later or whatever. Undertaker comes down, you've got the big moody entrance, you know, he just does the whole, goes to the corner, lifts his hands, and, you know, the lights come on with the big explosion, as you'd expect for Taker at this time period. But Brett does this kind of big sort of like exaggerated shoulder sort of skin call thing about the explosion and the lights coming up as well, which, again, I always like when Brett throws in those little things at the start of the match. I think we talked about, like, last time, about just a little smirk to the camera he gave before the start of the match previously. Now he's throwing that one in as well. He's just getting that he's getting his little in-ring character stuff going on here, and just to establish that you've got Sean as the official and as the fair official is in the corner, and he's, you know, he's checking Brett's gear in full before the match, and, you know, Brett's pulling like little sarcastic faces sort of thing here as Sean's checking him down, goes over to Taker and does the same. But you then have like Sean with the belt, and, you know, he hands it to Brett. Brett holds the belt before the match and just gives it a little look before going and legging it over into the corner and swatting the Undertaker with it, and just as the Undertaker's trying to get his big coat off as well, and then batters him in the corner. So you've got good old heel Bret Hart in the USA taking the advantage here, having the Sean's handed him the belt, something that you wouldn't see him want to do very often to many people, but legs it over to Mark and gets a match going. But you've got Taker basically just, you know, no selling the offense really, turning Brett, battering Brett in the corner, you know, landing clotheslines, and Brett needs to go and powder to the outside. But you've got Taker following him out there, whacks him into the guardrail, whacks him into the ring post. But then here, again, important to the match as a whole, you've got Shawn Michaels coming and talking to Undertaker here, and Undertaker backs Shawn Michaels off a couple of times. You know, it's just clearly establishing that element of like impartiality here in Shawn Michaels here, that stipulation's real, and they're just letting you know that, like, there's nothing going on with him in the Undertaker here, almost kind of thing, like Undertaker's in Shawn Michaels' face back at him and things like that there as well. So I think they do well to establish that. Brett moves as Undertaker goes to hit him, you know, meaning Undertaker whacks the ring post. Then Brett throws him into the steps. So, you know, Brett used that as a bit of a cutoff there. Brett goes to elbow Taker on the outside from the apron. Taker catches him and rams Brett into the ring post twice there as well. So what you've got here is you've got that the match has jump-started by Brett, but you've got some big early damage done to both of you. We've had people going into ring posts. We've had people going into steps. You've got people going into the guardrail sort of thing as well. So you're almost like, if it was a video game, we've almost got like both lads' energy bars is already like from the off, kind of, you know, halfway down here really. And they've established pretty much from the off, this isn't going to be a slow and, you know, sure match that's going to take a bit of a build into getting things going. You know, they've got their offense in early, and both lads have got a bit of damage. You know, back in the ring though, this is where Undertaker, you know, he's used that ramming Brett into the ring post there to his advantage, and he's now dominating, and he's pinpointed that Brett's back is something that is going to work here, and he's you know, double axe handle to the backbreaker. He does a backbreaker submission that looks great there over his knee, like stretching Brett back there. That was nearly the image to this particular show graphic, that one.
like a bow and arrow type, I call it. It's kind of like that, isn't it? But on the knee type, I love that.
Yeah, it looks good. You've got like a near fall here in the process. Take a, you know, puts Brett's head to the buckle. He applies a bear hug and stuff. So you've very much got Undertaker just establishing a bit of dominance early on in the match here. Takes Brett biting his way out of the out of the bear hug to even get out of the bear hug, but Taker lands a boot to the face as Brett's sort of running to try and escape there. This is where then the match sort of turns back the other way, and Brett takes a bit of control after he's landed the big boot there. Taker goes for a running elbow, but Brett manages to move out of the way. Brett ducks another one of Taker's boots to the face attempts, and you know, kicks the back of Taker's knee. And this is where Undertaker's isolated Brett's back as an area for focus. This is where Brett's gone the other way and he's like, right, the big man, what are you going to do with the big man? Take away the knee, sort of thing. And especially especially someone like the Undertaker. We've talked about it again in the Diesel match that we went through as well. Yeah. It's Brett having his little playbook, his little arsenal that he's coming back to for different types of workers that is in there. So here is, you know, it's kicks, it's stretches, it's stomps on in the ropes, it's twisting the knee in the corner, dropping an elbow on it, dropping knees on it. So Brett's really going to town on Taker's knee here to just sort of like take away the wheel of the big man there. Brett applies the figure four and gets a couple of one counts in the figure four there as Brett finds himself sorry, my Alexa's going off in the background, mate. I don't know if you can hear it.
Alexa wants to talk about this match, Gareth. To get involved.
No, well, while Taker's on his back in the figure four, there's a couple of near counts there, but this is where then Paul Bearer comes down. And obviously, Paul Bearer is separated for the Undertaker at this point. You know,
it's the Kane stuff, Gareth. You're not sorry to jump in, mate. It's that tie-in as well. Like you're saying, all these moving parts. You've got Paul Bearer's dropped the bombshell on Undertaker, like that your brother's alive. So it's like that's weighing on his mind in this title defense as well. And he's actually making an appearance here, Paul Bearer, to make it even worse. So another good tie-in there, mate.
Definitely, and that's sort of, you know, again, that's sort of. Clearly, it's like you say, it's in Taker's head, and that just gives him that bit of fire, really, to just turn out at the figure four. You know, reverses the pressure. Brett gets to the ropes, but Taker sort of likes it out of the ring because he just wants to get to Paul Bearer. So he's going after Paul Bearer to batter him, gets a couple of licks in, but that's the opportunity Brett Hart was waiting for as well. So Brett's you know, right on the outside, chop blocks Taker's knee from behind, and, you know, continues to work it as well. So straight back to that knee, doing more on it, gets Taker around the ring post and applies the old figure four around the ring post spot on the outside there, but breaks it at four when Shawn Michaels comes and, you know, he counts, you know, he's going to disqualify Brett if he gets to five on the outside there. So really, Shawn's impartiality coming into play for both lads here.
Also, Gareth, I don't think Mark done the rule you've got to do to protect Brett on the figure four around the post. He didn't hold on to Brett's foot, did he? So he done a Goldberg and let him bang his head on the floor. So
I was looking at Brett's head on the floor and I was thinking like, you know, there's
that's the hidden rule. You've got to hold on to Brett's foot. Like Steve, obviously being the best worker, like for me, Steve always all held on to it to protect Brett. You know what I mean? That's the, as I say, the key to that move. Like.
No, I was looking at Brett's head at the floor there, but like when he applied it, and I was thinking, Bill gets the negative here. He's not giving Mark the same negativity on his shoot interviews for that later down the years. But in the same way that we've had Paul Bearer come down as Brett continues to work the knee, we've now got Brian Pillman and Owen Hart from the Hart Foundation coming down to ringside here. You know, he whacks Taker's knee into the ring post and argues with him, and Brett continues to work that knee. He's twisting it, jarring it. He's applying a knee bar. You know, Taker's trying to choke, pull air to escape, but Shawn stops him again. Just reiterating, Shawn's on the level here, sort of thing. Even that, you know, Brett's well on top here. Taker's cheating to try and escape. Shawn stops him from, you know, stops him from doing those little things that he's trying to do. So you can believe that Shawn Michaels is living up to his word and calling this one straight down the middle. Taker finally kicks his way out of the knee bar and then goes outside to batter Brian Pillman and batter Owen Hart. And then Shawn legs it afterwards, and he's not having any of it. He's getting rid of Pillman and he's getting rid of Owen and sending those to the back. Meanwhile, in the ring, that gives us Taker the opportunity to land the choke slam on Brett, but where's Shawn Michaels? Yeah. To count to three, he's not there. He's in the aisle. He's got rid of Brian Pillman and Owen Hart, and now he's standing, looking completely in the other way, just looking all the way up that aisle, just making sure that Pillman and Owen definitely go through that curtain before he's going to turn around there. So, and you know, is so Taker's fuming. So Taker grabs Shawn, pulls him into the ring, and they argue on the apron. Again, cunning Brett using that as an advantage, rolls Taker up from the outside and gets a near fall. Taker's not having that. He levels Brett with a big clothesline, and then he's right into Shawn's face here because, yeah, you know, he's still not happy about that pinfall. You know, you've got Brett just needing to just escape a bit here. He powders to the outside, and then he drags Taker to the outside. He rams his back into the apron repeatedly and then into the ring post. Sean gets right in Brett's face and says, "Get your ass inside or you're out of here," you know. So he's really laying down the authority here. And, you know, Brett subserviently throws Taker back into the ring. He's following the rules of the rule maker here in the ring here. But this is where, again, you just get a shift in the match because Brett's been working the knee previously. But that last bit of offense, he's put Taker into the ring apron. He's put him into the he's put him into the ring post. So now Brett knows that Taker's got a bit of a weaker back. So this is where, back in the ring now, Brett's switched. He's working his back with forearms, headbutts, backbreaker. There's a near fall on the back of that. Fall away suplex, you know. So Brett's it's not just the knee is softening up, it's the back as well, which obviously both elements play into the sharpshooter there, where you know, when it comes to the hold. So it's natural for him to do that. Great bit where Brett goes to the second rope to land the elbow from the second, and gives it the big middle fingers to the crowd before he does it there. Bit of Steve Austin in the lad there, Matty.
It is. Always good to see.
Lands another near fall, lands a DDT for another near fall. But even though Brett's well on top here, you know, Undertaker shows he's not dead. He's not dead and buried. Not anymore, anyway. And he throws Brett headfirst into the top turnbuckle for a near fall. Brett regains control with headbutts to the back, the side rushing, and a pair of leg drops there. So, again, very much still Brett on top. Taker's not dead, but, you know, there's that little hope spot there for him. There's something. He's got a bit of something about him, but Brett's still clearly the man who's got the advantage going here. Goes for the sharpshooter, but, you know, Taker chokes Brett before he can apply it, and then rallies in the corner. Bit of back and forward before, you know, Taker briefly takes control. You know, he lands a big flying clothesline off the ropes, you know, and that really sort of, you know, shows that Brett's starting to suffer a bit more. You know, he gives him the front turnbuckle, Irish whip there, lands a big boot, lands a leg drop for an ear fall, and he, you know, he choke slams Brett from the outside to the in for a two and a half count. Brett takes a big ride there, doesn't he?
He does. I love that one. But even before, from the initial choke slam, which we'll talk about after the match, this is where I think this match is just flows so perfectly from that initial earlier choke slam. And I was gripped by this. I was gripped. So carry on.
Well, this is the part as well over there where you're getting into here, where you've had the Taker offense, you know, you've had the long Brett offense working two different body parts here. You're now getting into this point of where that damage is really setting in for both of them, and they are both, you know, it can turn, it can go back and forward this match, you know, now depending on who lands which piece of offense, really. You know, both lads are at this point in the match, and that's where, like you say, does flow in here. You know, Taker goes for the old school, but Brett goes back to that knee, crotching him on the turnbuckle on the top rope there, so doesn't manage to land that. Brett lands a big superplex here from the top rope. And I think one of the points I wanted to come back to here about, we talked before the match about Undertaker's working with workers in this match and him getting the opportunity to, you know, show different parts to his game. Selling isn't something that you'd have definitely associated with Undertaker to this point. No. But I think it's something where, you know, in this match, it shows that he's got that in his game as well here, because obviously with the work that's been done on his knee and things like that, it's something that he doesn't forget about throughout the match here. You know, before the superplex, Taker's knee sort of buckles on him as he's, you know, he's up there. So Brett then has to, like, fight to get him back up and land the superplex as well, sort of thing. So again, it's just a small thing there that just ties back in. But it's, you know, again, it's important. It's attention to detail. It's just that little something extra kind of thing that, you know, we all love.
I see you beaming already.
Love about this, that I'm beaming just as we're just getting into here, because we're at the business end of the match. Business end of the match at this point here. You know, Brett, you know, back in the ring. After the superplex, Brett slaps on the sharpshooter, but you know, I think this is the first time that anybody's ever ever escaped from the sharpshooter, and Undertaker powers out of it here and sends Brett absolutely flying, you know, out of the ring, and flies out of the ring to the, you know, onto the outside. You know, that's again shows the respect and everything like that, Brett, for Taker at this point as well, and things like that. You know, he was the right man for be the first person to break that at that time, and to do it in such like a convincing, meaningful way. It was like, whoa, like oh shit, Taker's here comes Taker, kind of thing at that point. You know, Taker reverses an Irish whip and lands that big sort of jump and clothesline that he does as a counter, gives a signal for the tombstone. You know, he goes for it, but Brett, again, cunning that he is to all these different scenarios, slides over the back, trips Mark from behind, obviously with his dodgy knee that he's got at this point, and then he applies the sharpshooter around the ring post.
I loved it. I forgot about this again. I loved that. I thought, what are you doing here? Because I thought he was just going to crotch him on the ring post, and I thought, shit, he's going to lock the sharpshooter around. Can't remember him ever doing it, Gareth.
And logical as well.
Yeah.
He's just put the sharpshooter on him in the middle of the ring, and the Undertaker's managed to sort of like power through. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to put it on him around the ring post where I'm on one side of the ring there. And then so I've got a bit of something that I can hold on to and things like that to try and put the damage in more. Why wouldn't you pull it out at this? You know, Brett's probably had that in his head almost for years. Probably when someone breaks a sharpshooter, I'm going to follow it up by trying to do an even worse, more deep sharpshooter sort of thing. He's already been doing the figure four around the ring post and at this point as well sort of thing. So again, it's just a fantastic bit of in-ring storytelling. But Taker's still got that power again, and we've shown that he can power out of the sharpshooter, powers out of it again, even though it's out of the ring post, and sends Brett flying right out of the ring, flying onto Shawn Michaels there, who's trying to control things from the outside, and knocks Shawn to the floor. What a great, well thought out spot that whole thing. One minute of wrestling there, kind of thing. Yeah. That's just top tier, just for thought process and everything that goes into it. But timing and execution, the way it's just the timing and sliding over his back on the tombstone, hitting the knee to be able to ground him to even put him into that sharpshooter position in the first place as well. Just the positioning of where he was going from the tombstone, just like chef's kiss, that mate. Yeah. Fucking, like honestly, that whole thing there, just brilliant. Now you've got Shawn Michaels, so he's been hit, so he's down on the outside. He's hurt his own knee, I think, in the process there. So he's holding his knee back in the ring. Brett's now sees this window of opportunity. Shawn's not around. There's a chair. Right, he's my chance. So he twats the Undertaker with the chair as Shawn's limping around, holding his knee on the outside. So Shawn's missed it. And so of course, he calls Shawn back into the ring. Shawn sort of slowly gets back in. Counts to three proper, you know, but two and a half, Taker kicks out. So, you know, that's pissed Brett off that, you know, Shawn wasn't in the ring quick enough, for, you know, even though if he'd been there, he couldn't have hit him with the chair in the first place. So good false heel logic there, kind of going into the in the process there. Shawn and Brett are arguing about that one. You know, Brett stomps Taker in the corner. Like, meanwhile, when he threw that steel chair away, he didn't throw it all the way out of the ring. No. It's right there in the corner of the ring on the far side. And as Shawn Michaels looks to his side, he sees a steel chair. Hang about, what's there a steel chair doing in the ring? So Shawn goes over, grabs that steel chair, and he comes back to Brett, holds a steel chair and, you know, questions him about it. Is this you? Is this you?
You know what it is, though, guy? It's also an old school blue chair as well. What even makes it even better. Not a black one, it's a blue one. It makes it just so that extra bit better, this.
Yeah. Just standing out there, like, you know, nice and like nice classic WWF chair there that you've got in the ring. So as Shawn's holding the chair straight down the middle, Shawn Michaels, you know, just trying to make sure that everything's runs to order, arguing away with Brett. Brett shouts "fuck you" at him and then spits at Brett, which Shawn finally cracks. That's the thing that just makes him switch there. Shawn goes to twat Brett with the chair in retaliation, but Brett ducks to the floor just as Taker stood up behind him to come and get Brett from behind. So that means that Shawn twats Taker full on and on the bonce and lays Taker out. Brett looks to the floor. take us a bit close to the ropes. So again, good old Brett just pulls him slightly away from the ropes there. He doesn't want him getting his leg or his hand on the ropes or anything like that. Yeah. Just pulling him a bit away. Covers Undertaker. Shawn Michaels gets down, counts to 1, 2, 3, good and proper, like, you know, like he
slight hesitation before the feet because he knows. And as you say, it's the perfect positioning, Gareth, because Michaels is halfway out the ring. And when he hits that three count, he's fucking gutted, isn't he? And he just gets out of there. He's halfway out anyway. It's just perfect, mate, yeah. Honestly.
It's the mat. Your new world champion for the fifth time. Bret the Hitman Hart. Shawn Michaels, like you say, straight out of the ring, up the aisle, walking up there gutted. Undertaker, when he comes round, is straight after him. And you've got Bret Hart in the ring, holding up the world title, holding up five fingers to denote his fifth world title. Celebrates in the corner, covered in the Canadian flag that he had the national anthem playing for at the start of the match. And Brian Pillman, Davey Boy, and Owen come back down and celebrate in the ring with him. And what a match, Matty.
Yeah.
What a finish. What a bit of business overall.
The match, Gareth, 28 minutes and 9 seconds. And for me, I was gripped from the start. But from that chokeslam, once they get Bearer tied up out the way, once they get Pillman and Owen out the way, and taking it to that choke slam, and Michaels isn't there to count. Honestly, mate, it's one of the best, I think. Like, I haven't watched this match in a long time, and it's one of the most. From there, it just builds and builds. As you say, logically, everything looks just. It's the as you say, the positioning, the timing of everything. It just, like, there's words I can't use to describe how good this is, though. Like, genuinely, like, I'm getting, you say you beam, and I'm getting years, you know, as listeners know, I get this now and again. I can't actually describe to you how good this is, though. It's like, it's just, because you can't see, they're not talking to each other to say, like, right, get in position for this spot, or it's just honestly like they haven't gone over it. And it's just, it's amazing. It is honestly amazing, mate, isn't it?
Oh, it just wrestling perfection, this. And yeah. I'm the same as you. I hadn't watched this match for a while. You know, I've watched it twice to, you know, for recording this. And just both times, just like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
This is it, the kind of thing. Yeah. This is wrestling. This is what wrestling is all about. And this is why we love it. This is why we've seen it for so many years.
Yeah.
Great in-ring work, great storytelling within the match. Great tying together of the storylines outside of the ring that they've got going on there with, like, yeah. you know, multiple characters. Even, like you say, interweaving the Paul Bearer stuff with the Kane side of things. So there's something there that's to come, that's coming, you know, coming out of the back of it. The Pillman Owen stuff getting involved in the match, and it not needing to be some ridiculous amount of clusterfuckage that's kind of gone in the match. It's just two lads coming down. What's their, you know, reason for them coming down? It's just so that Shawn Michaels misses that pinfall, so you get the opportunity to see that Taker had him beat at that point, and would have, you know, he probably would have beat him there if it wasn't for.
But it's HBK doing his job at the same time, isn't it? It's like, I'm being like, you know, getting everything. I want this to go 100% the way it should go, and that fair and fair. It's honestly,
it's almost like as if you could have, like, wrote a big list of, like, well, what do we need to be able to, like, get across here? And you get across all these different things that relate to all these different characters and moving parts. And there's just, like, a tick next to all of them in every scenario. And then it's then, well, all right, that's okay in principle, in theory, kind of thing, as an idea. Like, can they deliver on it? And then you've got, like, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, and The Undertaker in there. And, like, can they deliver on it? Fucking right, they can, you know. They're not going to, like, screw up the spots at the key time. Is the timing going to be right on everything? Yes. Are they going to care about the, like, small details that need to go into every element of this? Right down to, you know, I talked about Shawn Michaels shouting at Bret on the outside. Bret's very clear and audible, fuck you, and very clear and, you know,
the
visible.
Golly, though. You can just see it flying off his mouth.
I was reading in the book, in Bret's book, and he was saying there how, like, it says to Shawn, I'll spit in your chest, sort of thing. And he says the gob was like, miles bigger than he thought it could have been, kind of thing, just because it was just in the match and the knackered and stuff at that time. And just like,
trying to get it together, and it says,
so he just got a great big fucking glob of it, kind of thing, like, yeah, you know, that, you know, bounced up and like bounced into Sean's face. And he says, so like, even in the back, he was like, even with their animosity, he was like, apologise to Sean, you know, for the size of the spit that it's in. And he says, and Sean just shook his hand and thanks for the match. So even after, you know, it's one of those, it's such a weird thing between them. For all the hatred and for all the animosity and things like that, they still both appreciate a good bit of business stuff.
No, they always had that, Gareth. They always had that respect for on camera and delivering and respecting each other as performers. That never, ever waned, did it? They always had that for each other.
But, like you said, yeah, I mean, you referenced it like previously, but you know, we talk about the Fatu finish being good. This is an all time, like
this is top three of all time, and that's just me. I'm the top five, man, Gareth, as you know, it's top three, mate. This, like, top of my head, what other ones come to mind? This is just, as you say, but it's evident we've said, and if we're repeating ourselves, I don't care this time because it deserves to be repeated. The layout of intertwining all the stories of what's come before, what's during, and what's to come afterwards with the Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, the seamless transition into that feud as well. It's the timing, the execution, everything about it is why it's in the top three finishes of all time. And it gets that, like when Brett wins, because you're forgetting it's in Canada, does that, like, you get that mixed reaction when he wins, just because, like, and sometimes fans can do that, can't they? When they see a good bit of business done well, you've just got to hold your hands up and applaud it, and you forget about the faces, heels. That's where you say the art of wrestling takes over there for me. And it was just honestly, like, I can't speak highly enough about this. And you know, and I say I don't want to do the match disservice either, like, as a whole, because the finish is an all-timer, but the match itself, as we've said, just go, we say it every episode of this now, if you haven't watched it, go and watch this match back from like the entrances, just to get the whole 30 plus minutes and just see all these stories like come together. And that is just, it is, as you said, Gareth, it's wrestling perfection for sure.
100%. And just another on the list of Brett's not only great matches, but just great finishes. And you know, like you say, throughout the match as a whole, just the structure of it, the logic of it as well, that just going into the, you know, right down to the body parts that they're working, right down to the way it was pieced together from Undertaker coming out of that sharpshooter, and then everything that then followed onto it as well, the you know, just layers and layers and layers of things that you can just get lost in here and just talk about. And then even right down to Shawn Michaels finding that chair and him flipping after getting spit on, like, just totally make sense tying in with the whole idea of him playing it down the middle to that point. Because otherwise, if there had been a bit of, you know, question about Shawn Michaels, then like he's going to pick that chair.
Because getting pushed on, where like, and he hit his knee, he didn't kick off over that, he carried on with his job. Whereas nowadays, or whatever, any, how many matches have you seen refs get bumped into? Especially ref, and they start fighting. He's been the bigger man, saying, right, I'm doing my job still. But then when he sees that chair, like a referee would do, he'd go, wait there a minute. And then Brett, as you say, tips him over the edge with not just the fuck you, but the spit, like we've said. It's honestly, it's perfection.
Yeah.
Perfection. Brilliant. And that's all five WWF title wins now, Gareth, covered. So listeners of the show, I know we're a bit secretive of our episodes before we play it, but listeners, we'll have, you know, a brand new totally two matches, Gareth, going forward now, as we've covered them first 5 days WWF title wins.
Yeah, it just gives us the opportunity now to just go in a different direction post-world title. There's a different belts we might be going for, different organisations that he's wrestled in and won belts in. Is it just different matches at different stages of his career? You'll have to tune in and find out where we go to next. But, bringing it all to a close, I have to say, Matty, that was a match that was excellently executed. It's another episode excellently executed.
Couldn't there? Truer words could never be spoken. Now I'm off for a game of bones and a shot of Jack Daniels. Farewell, everybody.
See you, mate.